Hello and welcome to Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, and I am here thanks to the generosity of Windermere Vachon Real Estate, who supports all our community information programming, and they make our emergency alert service possible. You can find them on the web at WindermereVachon.com. You are listening to the Voice of Vachon, KVSHLP, Vachon Island, Washington, your island connection. Real Talk is here with you every noon, or every Tuesday at noon, and every Friday at 6 p.m. to explore questions large and small. Today is a really interesting one, wondering what you would like to know about what people might say about you when you're dead. And my guest today is Robert Leung, who kind of says, why wait? Robert Leung is a certified life coach and has been using the notion and the process of living eulogies for a couple of years with groups of men. Welcome, Robert.
Hi, Susan. Thanks. It's great to be here.
Tell us what a living eulogy would be. What does it look like?
Well, I think a living eulogy is just like any other eulogy, except you're delivering it to someone while they're alive. And while I say that as what seems like a small thing, it's actually a huge thing to be able to deliver these things, eulogies, to people while they're alive.
Why is it a huge thing?
Well, I think people have a great fear of eulogies because it reminds them of death, obviously, and of loss. And that fear keeps them from really understanding the value of eulogies to deepen relationships. And ultimately, I think people's fear is not of death, but of intimacy.
Tell us more about that. How does a living eulogy create intimacy? What happens?
Well, I think in much the same way that a eulogy does, death is the ultimate context for our lives. It brings everything into sharp relief, the loss of someone close to us. And I think, in fact, a large part of grief, maybe the biggest part of grief, is that we realize there are things that we didn't get to say to that person. So a living eulogy takes all of that grief out of the equation by giving you the opportunity to realize what it is you really need to say to those people in your lives that matter. And it's something that we avoid strenuously because intimacy is uncomfortable for us.
That's a big question in and of itself. Do you have a notion of why in our current culture we are so afraid of intimacy?
That is a great question. I don't know. I don't know why we are. It is uncomfortable, so I am thinking that that's the biggest reason. That discomfort is in writing my article about eulogies, that discomfort is more overwhelming than the threat of death, actually. We'd rather deal with death than with intimacy.
That's worse than public speaking.
Yeah,
I'd rather die than be intimate.
Exactly.
What is it about intimacy that makes us so afraid?
I think it makes us so vulnerable. I think there's nothing quite like the vulnerability of dealing with death, the loss of a person, because that's the ultimate loss. You can't go back and fix that.
Well, you've been using this process of living eulogy with a couple of groups of men for a number of years, and I hear you talking about how I feel when I lose somebody, but in this process of the living eulogy, how does the subject person react? What does it do to or for them?
Well, if you look at the meaning of eulogy, which is ancient Greek, E-U-U means true, and logia means words. So it's true words, which meant in ancient Greece, praise.
Hmm.
So this group of men that you've mentioned, we've been writing each other's eulogies over the past year and delivering them to each other. So So there are, I think there's eight of us, and so you'd get seven men delivering your eulogy, and I was the first one to go. So taking it in that context, it is high praise. There are things I learned, and I've known some of these men for 30 years closely, and I learned things about how they felt about me and how I had affected their lives in ways that I had, was not aware of before. And it was an incredible validation and an honoring of who I am that I can now take and use. If I was dead when I was being delivered, I don't think I'd be able to take advantage of that quite
Shucks,
the same
couldn't
way.
Couldn't do that, yeah.
Right. So it's the ultimate validation. And unfortunately, you wouldn't get to hear it ordinarily.
How is it that that validation has changed the way you walk through the world?
Well, I feel affirmed in a way that I wasn't even quite aware that I needed to be affirmed. Uh-huh. But who doesn't want some praise in their life? You know, so that made me feel good about myself. It made me feel valuable and worthwhile. And it encouraged me to continue to bring this message out to other people, hence this discussion we're having right now.
Yeah. You said it's high praise. It's also truth. Were all of these eulogies, living eulogies, nice?
They were, for the most part. Mm. Any critique or resentment was very minuscule, but also part of giving it, you know, context and truth. It wasn't like I'd lived like I've gone, but
you're dead now.
In the context of the eulogy, imagining I was gone, for the vast majority of it, it was praise and validation. I mean, some of the ways I did things might have been a little bit questionable, but for the most part, the outcome and the intent of what I was trying to achieve was validated. And sometimes you think you're doing the right thing, but hearing other people endorse that and validate it in that way, it had immeasurable inspiration to me to continue the process and be better at it. You know, it's like being praised for anything you do. So, wow, that makes I'm good at that, and I'm going to do more of it. You know, and at this point in my life, to have that inspiration was really valuable.
What about the other men in your group who have been eulogized by their comrades? How have you seen them change, if at all? Or how did the process impact them?
Well, I can tell you that most of the men, well, this call is a phone call, so we're all on the phone.
Uh-huh.
But there isn't a dry eye in the house. I mean, and I was definitely that way too. I was tearful during the process and have been tearful in delivering eulogies to the other men. And that in itself is a unique experience for men to have.
Yeah.
Is to be moved to tears.
Among other men.
Yeah, among other men and through the endorsement and the love and praise of men who matter in their lives. But I don't think it's reserved only for us. I think this would be a common experience among men and women.
Did any of them backfire?
No, none of them did. They were, as I said, the vast majority of it was positive and honoring and compassionate and caring.
So if I wanted to begin the process of receiving a living eulogy for myself, what's my first step?
Well, you could write your own, which is another thing that we're doing also, writing our own eulogies. You can start with that. You could ask, you'd have to ask somebody to write your eulogy, I guess.
Is there a limit on the number of people?
No, I mean, you know, most people, if you ask them that question, I don't think they have a vast number of people who'd be willing to do it, but you might.
I'm using me as the universal example.
Exactly. But, well, I mean,
if we all have, say, four or five close friends,
right,
whose opinions we value, and ask each of them to write a eulogy, is that the process?
Yes, it would be. In my case, these are men that I've been part of an organization for 3 decades. So we have a real groundwork and a foundation. But even this request was, you know, taking it above the line. And this is, like I said, after 3 decades of working together closely, when I asked them to do this, there were a number of men who were like balked at that. You know, they was automatically went like, what is that about, you know? But to their credit, when I asked them to do it because of our relationship, they were willing to go to that place. And as I said, what we discovered for ourselves and as a group was profound.
Yes. And how did what you discovered differ from what you expected when you started the process?
Well, the fact is, the only thing I knew was that it would deepen the level of intimacy between us. But I didn't know how they really felt about me, even after all that time and experience together. And there were things that they didn't know until they thought about, well, what would it be like if he was gone? He's dead. Suddenly it brought up for them ideas and thoughts and experiences and memories that they didn't even know they had.
So the opening of the process is, what would my life be like if this person was dead?
Right.
Gone.
Gone.
Could not come back.
Right. It's the ultimate time limit. Death is the ultimate time limit.
Yeah, it is. The ultimate deadline.
And when you suggested, you know, how would you do it? And you'd ask 5 other people, just ask 5 people to write your eulogy and see how that automatically shifts and possibly deepens your relationship. It will deepen it on some level. It will suddenly become way more intimate just by asking the question.
I'm wondering if that splash of intimacy that's created in doing a living eulogy sticks, or if it's just a moment in time. Because to my mind, intimacy is something that grows and builds and lingers, hopefully.
Yeah, I think that that's true. But I think there are splashes of intimacy, too. I can't say, I think intimacy, like anything else, needs to be sustained.
Mm-hmm.
So a splash is great. It's better than none. But it needs to be sustained, and you open the door to a deeper conversation. It's like breaking through thresholds, I think. So you open a door to another level of intimacy, and you can continue in that process or not, just like building a muscle, you know.
Yeah. You're listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, and at thevoiceofvashon.org. We're going to take just a brief break here. I'm talking with Robert Leung about living eulogies and how they can increase intimacy in your life. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
VOV programming support is provided by the Vashon Island Chamber of Commerce. The chamber represents over 250 member businesses and organizations on Vashon and supports the community by organizing events such as Halloween, Easter, Christmas, and of course, Strawberry Festival. Better businesses make a better island. More info at VashonChamber.com.
Support for VOV programming is provided by Giraffe, celebrating creativity, beauty, and justice. Giraffe is committed to sourcing home and personal goods that reflect your values. Fair trade, local, global, and green. Open 7 days a week in the heart of Vashon Town. Find them on the web at giraffehome.com.
We are back on Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, and I'm here with certified life coach Robert Leung, who has been using the process of living eulogies to build intimacy among a men's group, right? That you have worked with for 30 years.
Some of them I've known for 30 years, actually even longer than 30 years. We've been meeting once a week for 30 years.
As a life coach, you have clients. Do you use this practice of a living eulogy or invite them to do that in their processes?
I don't in general do that. I think I've mentioned it to one person, one of my clients. But it's not a tool I've actually tried to bring into the practice of life coaching, except in that one case where I thought it was relevant. I think there are other issues that need to be dealt with, and that hasn't come up. But I think it's something that would serve everyone, just to, as I said, deepen relationships.
Let's talk about intimacy as a concept, because what you're saying is that the notion of telling a person what impact essentially they have on my life creates intimacy. I take it both directions.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the values of the living eulogy. It's not only how you feel about that person, but it certainly encourages the relationship in terms of how they feel about you. You know, so reflecting on that is a powerful tool to increase intimacy both ways.
How would you define intimacy?
I would think that that's the truth of how you feel about someone, not holding anything back.
What about the notion of vulnerability?
Well, vulnerability is certainly a huge part of intimacy. And I think that's why we avoid it so much, because it makes us feel vulnerable. And that's something that, you know, can be uncomfortable, but is ultimately liberating and inspiring.
What is it about our culture, in your view, that makes intimacy such a scary thing, or vulnerability to another human being such a scary thing?
Well, I don't think that's just our culture. I think that's pretty universal, actually. There may be other cultures that are better at it, but we live a very, very separated lives, very distracted lives. And I think human beings in general are not particularly self-reflective or aware. So I think it's part of the human condition for the most part, but we as a, you know, an internet computerized society have begun to separate even more and isolate even more and become, you know, enclosed in our own bubbles. So that's pretty hard to break through to be intimate.
It makes me think of our fundamental values, as in, what do we consider success in our culture? And I think that has changed. That takes me back to literature that I read. Young women in Victorian times and prior to that, and what they wrote about what they wanted to develop in themselves as young women. And back before the turn of the 20th century, young women were saying, I want to be a good person. I want to be an accomplished person. I want to be good to others. I want to have a strong spiritual life. Fast forward to today, and what is it young women, and this is going to be something else for young men, what is it that young women want to develop in themselves? What do you see in young women and in young men? What is it they value and nurture within themselves now?
That's a great question. My suspicion, either consciously or unconsciously, is the things that we value are our relationships. And I, as I said, and I think logically that's unconscious. But I think as human beings, we're communal animals, and our lives are based on relationship. So my sense is that our instincts, if nothing else, drive us to be in relationship, and they are ultimately the things that matter. And in relation to eulogies, that when you hear people talk about the person that's gone, when they're gone, that was the only thing that mattered to them.
The relationship.
The relationship, yes.
The relationship with that person, not that they made a lot of money or were famous or were really good looking.
Exactly.
The things that we tend to spend a lot of our time on.
Right.
Aren't the things that matter.
Right.
When someone is gone. So what you're saying is that if we do a living eulogy, we bring back into focus the things that are valuable about that human being.
Exactly. Not just for us, but for them as well. And that's, again, the relationship.
And we have relationships beyond those that are in, whether they be support groups or families. We have relationships that are electronic. We have relationships with our peer group. We have relationships with political and cultural organizations,
right,
and views. And each one of those, I believe, shapes who we want to be, who we choose to be.
Yeah, I think that you're right. All of those things shape us, but I think it's our personal relationships that have potentially the greatest influence on who we are and who we choose to be, certainly as children, our parents, friends and family. Depending on how tight that network is, it isn't always. And given my experience as a coach and in writing this eulogy for life concept, very often those the relationships that appear to be the closest to us are the ones that are most tenuous. And so I think they need to be nurtured. I think they need to be cared for. I think they need to be constantly built upon. And the eulogy for life, I think, is, in my experience, I think is the most dynamic way to do that.
As a start toward greater intimacy.
Yes, yes. Because we don't, you know, we're not guaranteed how long I'm going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all believe that. You know, it's like, well, I'll exercise tomorrow. I'll tell that person how I feel about them one day. You know, I'll get around to it. Well, there are no guarantees. I know plenty of people who have lost people before their time, and I've lost one or two myself. So, mm-hmm. You know, you strike while the iron is hot, you know, and it's hottest right now. Because we don't have any guarantees. And that's the power of the eulogy. And it's power because we realizing that if you've lost anybody, then you know this already. If you haven't, don't wait.
Don't wait. That's the admonishment.
Carpe diem.
Admonition from the notion that you, Robert Leung, have brought to us in the idea of a living eulogy.
Yeah, I wanted to mention just some of what I think the advantages of the living eulogy are. We discover how we really feel about the people who matter to us most. We get to share with them and deepen our relationships. We get to correct any misunderstandings or resentments. And that eulogy will come in handy one day, because you'll be able to actually use it when that person is gone. But writing your own eulogy, you discover a new level of self-awareness for you. Things that you didn't know about how you felt about people and your capability of feeling, the depth and expanse of with which you can feel. And, you know, you get to avoid grief and enrich the lives of others. So there are a lot of advantages to writing eulogies for people while they're alive.
I'd like to go to the notion of writing one's own eulogy.
Mm, yeah.
It'd be kind of interesting to compare what other people say versus what you say about yourself.
Yes. You're right. That's a topic in and of itself, and I've written mine.
What was your experience with that?
It was incredibly self-critical.
Oh.
So it wasn't as generous, and so that was interesting to reflect on that I'm, you know, more critical of myself than some of the people who know me deeply and intimately. So it was, again, another level of self-awareness to see myself and then to hear how other people saw me.
You know, it's interesting that in our culture today, we have, in a way, an entire industry, many entire industries of that are designed to create self-awareness. I'm wondering why. why do we have to be so conscious of that? Is that something new to human Western culture? Or is it something we need to relearn that has been there And we forgot about it?
I think it's an interesting observation. I don't think it's been there. I think, as I said, I think human beings are not innately self-aware. I think it's just the way we're kind of built. But I think this culture in particular, and maybe Western cultures in general, tend to be less self-reflective, and we have way more distractions that we'd prefer than other cultures do too. So there's that. But I think we, you know, in general, as human beings, we shy away from things that are uncomfortable. So not realizing the benefits of, you know, we realize the benefits of exercise and diet and eating right and doing things. They're not comfortable.
Right.
And a lot of us don't do them. You know, we're a pretty fat culture too.
Not consistently, yeah.
But it's simply a matter of, you know, what are you willing to endure to have the benefits of something, you know? I don't think we see the practical benefits of intimacy until it's too late.
Or self-awareness, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The practical benefits of intimacy and self-awareness.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, too, if it's, are we evolving? I mean, we're past the point, at least right now, where we have to worry about whether we're going to eat, for the most part, or have a roof over our heads, for the most part. Sometimes I think, that could change.
Yeah, exactly.
But right now, we're okay with that. So we have the luxury, if you will, of self-awareness and of developing our relationships. In the face of all the distractions.
Well, yeah, and as you said, that's a big challenge. I think since self-awareness is somewhat uncomfortable and requires work, I think, you know, the distractions have an edge. You know, they're always a little bit more easy to go to the distraction than it is to do the work. You know, so I think that's always going to be there.
Demanding and compelling, and yeah. I've heard several experts on the topic of happiness versus joy. Or maybe it's the other way around. Happiness versus joy. What is true happiness? And what is... it's not joy. It's fun. It's distraction. It's... So what I'm trying to say poorly is we seem to value and pursue entertainment and distraction.
Yes.
But not true happiness.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. But I think it's just like, you know, it's the junk food of our emotional life, you know. So I think that we're prone to that. I think it's just part of the species, you know. You work to get the things that matter to you. I just don't think we're aware of what matters to us in this context of relationships and intimacy. And we're not aware of the benefits of that.
Robert Leung, I cannot thank you enough for the time you've given us and for the thought-provoking discussion of the idea of a living eulogy. So, folks, gather five of your best friends and ask them to write a eulogy for you. Write about what they think of you, assuming that you're gone. What would life be like without you? You've been listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. Stay tuned to Voice of Vashon. You never know what you're going to get next. I think it might be vintage J&B and a whole lot more music and talk. It's community radio. It's your island connection. Thanks for listening.